Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
Welcome back. All right, another great topic for you that I know you're going to love. Ready? I've got the perfect investment for you. Here it is. It is completely liquid. It has a high return, consistently high returns. It is very safe. It's tax-free. All the money you get out of it, take it now, take it later, completely tax-free. And when you're done with it, you can do the same thing for your heirs and give it to them and they can have the same thing. Doesn't that sound fantastic? David, where do I sign up? No such thing. That's the perfect investment and it doesn't exist on the planet. And so if you ever hear or have somebody tell you that they have that for you, run, not walk. Put on your sprinting shoes and get out of there. Well, it's easy to be tempted by those kinds of offers, or at least to have them catch your attention when we are in a very low interest rate environment coupled with concerns about volatility, increased longevity, people living longer and having longer retirements. You know, retirement is no longer a long vacation. It now can span 30, 40 years for some people. So the game's changed. It's very different. Now, can you have low risk, high returns, and liquidity? Well, not really from any one investment. You can do that with an overall financial plan. You could do that by combining different investments together, each with their own characteristics. Combine them together to get an overall plan that can offer you those desirable features. Now, once upon a time, back, say, oh, I don't know, 1980, you could get that. You could get a high return with relatively low risk and still have some liquidity. I was 12, but I do remember my grandmother having CDs, and she explained it all to me at her kitchen table one day. She was earning 14%. Remember those days? 14% on CDs. Of course, interest rates in general were a lot higher. House mortgages were a higher rate of interest. Borrowing for a car, all sorts of interest rate-based loans were higher, but you also could earn a lot more on your savings than, of course, you can today. So yeah, there was a time, but maybe in 1980, but not in 2015. Probably not in 2016 or 17 either. So I don't see that in the immediate future. So back to the point of not being able to get it from one investment, what do? You have to combine together different investments to give you that overall desirable combination of things, low risk, liquidity, and high returns, or higher potential for returns. So one of the ways you can look at this, because it's very easy to get all this tangled up, I like to categorize and organize things, and I do that all the time with my own things I think about and kind of file them away in different filing cabinets in my mind. And so what I do when I build plans for people is I look to investments that fit each of these different categories that I have constructed. So I'll share that with you because I think it's helpful to think about it in this way. First, let's look at, since we know we can't get all three, high return, low risk, and liquidity, well, then we've got to settle for the next best thing from an individual investment or investment type. And that is two out of three ain't bad. Okay, so what do we do? Well, we categorize. So that we're going to break it up and see which investments can give us our two out of three in each category. So let me walk you through it. I think it'll make sense. First, let's look at low risk and liquidity. Okay, so that's a desirable part of your overall plan. You need some of your money, everybody. They never say everybody. No, I'm saying everybody. Everybody needs some low risk, liquid money. Now, it's very easy to get. It's very obvious. You can have money in a bank account, money market, savings account, checking account, whatever the banks call it, but basically liquid money that you can go get with no notice. You could go to the bank and say, I need to draw this money out of my account, or you can write a check. Part of that liquidity includes not losing money on the withdrawal. So when I say liquidity, I'm also talking about, not to be overly technical about it, but I'm also referring to marketability. So liquidity without marketability doesn't really do the same thing. In other words, if you could sell an investment and it's completely liquid, but you're going to cost you 10% to get it, that's not the same as what I'm talking about. That's still liquid, but it's not marketable without taking a haircut. So we don't want a haircut. We want to be able to get our money. This particular category, we want to be able to get our money quickly, and we don't want to lose anything by getting it. So low risk and liquid. Cash, money markets, all those things that are very short-term. Maybe a short-term CD, you know, that rolls over every week or every month. You don't lose much if you cash that in. So that's the first category. Everybody needs that. And every financial plan I build, everybody's got that as part of the plan. Okay, so that's category one. Category two, well, before I go to category two, what am I missing from category one? High returns. Okay, so there's always going to be the two things you get and the one you don't. So you get low risk and you get liquidity, but you don't get high return for category one. Category two, we're going to go to liquidity and growth potential, not low risk. So that's the part I'm going to leave out now for category two. Liquid and growth potential, but it could lose, okay? And it's not low risk. Well, what fits that category? Well, here we have the largest category. Thousands of choices, okay? Here's just a few, right? You could do stocks, bonds, mutual funds, load, no load. What else? Exchange-traded funds, preferred stocks, pretty much everything that's available on Wall Street. There are so many of these choices that can give you growth potential, not a guarantee, but potential, and it is liquid. Now, again, if you go into a mutual fund where if you sell it within the first 5 years, there's a charge, you've got to bear that as part of that liquidity, but it's still liquid. You could still get your money back and it won't kill you to get your money back. But you are accepting the reality that all of those choices I just shared with you, all of them have the potential to lose. Simple rule of thumb, especially with stocks and mutual funds. They can go up 15%. Guess what? They can go down by the same amount. And bonds can go down in value. Interest rates go up, bonds go down. Now, our third category is what we call low risk with some growth potential. What am I leaving out? Liquidity. So what fits that category? Well, in higher interest rate environments, there'll be more choices. But today, those choices have really shrunken to include fixed annuities and index annuities, where your money's safe. That's the low risk part. It's backed by the insurance company. And then the second piece is the potential for growth. Depending on the interest rates at the time and how things are working, the particular product, you can have the potential to grow without putting your money at risk. So those are your three primary categories that you can work with. Should you put all your money in any one of those? I don't think so. Most people, I find, are served well by combining the three categories. I need liquidity with low risk, I need liquidity with growth potential, and I need low risk with growth potential as well. Now, there's one more thing to keep in mind, and that is to be careful with investments that only can do one of three. And I've got a few examples for you. REITs, for example, real estate investment trust, or variable annuities, both of those are less liquid. They have growth potential, but they also are not low risk. So they only have one of the three. They've got the growth potential, but they're not as liquid and they have risk. So when you build a plan, put these things together in the right way for you. Get help if you need to. And if you do that, that will help you plan stronger.
Does getting financial advice seem like a game of cat and mouse? Maybe it's time to hire a fiduciary, a financial professional who puts the needs of his clients ahead of his own. A fiduciary also means an advisor should recommend products and services he believes will best serve his clients' needs, not what an insurance company or investment company tells him he has to sell. Next time you're talking to an advisor, ask him, "Are you a fiduciary? Yes or no?" If the advisor doesn't know, then the answer's probably no. This public service announcement is brought to you by Holland Financial, who wants to help you to plan stronger. For more information, call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com.
Welcome back. Got a good one for you. Ready? Stock market's rigged. Well, not really. But that's what people feel sometimes. They feel like it's rigged for the wealthy or the traders or a whole host of different people. Maybe the government. Maybe it's a conspiracy. It's not rigged. But there are different approaches that people take to investing. There are different strategies. And there are different time horizons. Always remember that when you see the stock market move and you see at the end of the day, oh, the Dow was up 50 points today, or the Dow was down 50, or whatever is going on, or the Dow's down 500. It's the sum total of the trading for the day. Now, there's always concerns about people that the market is manipulated by big investors or the people that can trade real fast, the lightning trading and super fast computers and all of that. I think there's some argument for that, but the big difference is that it's how people approach investing and whether or not they have to sell or they have to buy. The end of the day, sum total of all the millions of transactions that have taken place in a day, which in some cases is just with one stock trading hands, but the volume is gargantuan. You're talking about millions and millions of shares trading hands. So the net result is what that closing price is. And it just depends on which way the tide goes with a particular stock or with the overall market. More people want to sell a particular company than want to buy it. Well, guess what? Price is going to go down. You know, if you're sitting on 2 tons of bananas and you need to sell them quickly before they turn brown, you're not going to get full price for those bananas. I mean, it's that simple. So it's always supply and demand. And of course, that is affected not only by just individual investors, their particular strategies, or the strategies that are being recommended by the advisors and the brokers and all the people involved. You also have big institutional investors. All of these things combine together to affect the market. Now, one of the most fundamental things about how the wealthy invest versus somebody who's not is the way they look at the investing. And I'll give you a hypothetical example. And I'll need to read some of the details to you, so bear with me. But I've got an example I think will make this point very well. So I have Wealthy Susan. Wealthy Susan has $2 million in cash. She's got a home. It's paid for. No mortgage. No debt. And she has Social Security of $2,000 a month and a pension of $3,000. So her total income every month without drawing from her investments is $5,000. She's pretty comfortable with that, but she does need an extra couple thousand dollars to maintain the lifestyle to which she has become accustomed. So she takes $500,000 with the assistance of her advisor. She invests that to produce the extra $2,000 a month. So she's getting the income she needs from her investments. Now, in addition, she wants to put some more money to work. She decides with her investment advisor to buy, among other things, GE stock, General Electric stock. And she does this, in my hypothetical example, in January of 2008, and she buys GE stock for $37 a share. Subsequent to that, of course, we had the stock market fall in 2008, which is why I'm using this time period to make the point. So she bought it right before the market went down even further. In 2008, the overall market went down 38%. GE stock went from $37 to $27 by the end of the year. So based on how much she had purchased, that would have been a $19,000 loss. If she had sold, she didn't sell. She kept it as part of her portfolio. Of course, subsequent to that, GE stock recovered. So she did not incur that $19,000 in my example. Now, alternatively or conversely, less wealthy John has a $300,000 cash account to work with. He's got some debt. He's got some obligations. He does not have the pension that wealthy Susan has, but he still has the same Social Security. So in order to get the income he needs, he's very dependent on his investment portfolio. John does his research. He considers hiring an advisor, but ultimately decides to do it himself because he figures he can save some money that way. Money's tight. Don't want to waste it on anything I don't need. That's John's thinking. He gets magazines and newsletter subscriptions, watches a market, puts his money to work, and he also buys GE as part of his portfolio, just like Susan did. But of course, his experience is a little different than Susan's because when GE is going down along with the rest of the market, again, he's heavily dependent on drawing money from his investment portfolio. He finds himself in a situation where he can't stand it anymore. He panics. You know, he's checking the market a dozen times a day, and he decides to sell GE, and he sells it and ultimately incurs the loss that Susan didn't incur. He's got a $19,000 loss. And then that, along with the withdrawals and the other losses he experienced, he loses half his portfolio in 1 year. This happened to people, by the way. So it's not, it's a fictitious example, but it's real life. So that's a tale of two cities. That's a tale of two scenarios where the person who is able to invest without the emotional panicking response because they're so dependent on that portfolio versus a person who can just let it ride. I'm not suggesting that people who are successful with their money ignore their money. That's not it at all. It's that they don't have to liquidate when the market's down. In fact, ironically, when you look at a stock like GE or any large company stock, and you see, for example, they've got, I don't know, they've got a trading volume of, say, 5 million shares traded hands in one day. And let's say it's a really bad day for the market and everybody's, you know, freaking out, the market's down, people are getting out, the talking heads on TV are just salivating because they're so excited to be able to talk about something going on. You know, let's give them dirty laundry, talk about how bad things are, and they're excited to talk about it. People are blood in the streets. The market's down 500 points. Well, the wealthy, the institutional investor, the smart money, the people that have these large pension plans that they oversee, these billion-dollar portfolios, those people are doing what? They're buying when that individual investor who is freaking out is selling. Always remember, for every closing price, every day's trade, when you see these millions of shares trading hands, that somebody has an equally opposite opinion of the person selling. So if you say, that's it, I'm getting out, this market is going to go down, this stock's going to go down, forget it, I'm going to cash, somebody else is saying, okay, I'll be happy to buy that from you right now because I think it's going to do the opposite. I think that it's a great time, for example, to buy oil stocks because oil prices are down or these stocks have been beaten up. Hey, if I buy it at this price, I'm going to get its dividend. And that dividend, based on the current price, is now instead of it being 3%, I'm going to get, in effect, because I'm buying the stock for less cost, that dividend now, even though it's the same dollar amount, same amount per quarter that I will get, I'm buying it at a price that's going to give me an effective higher yield. So instead of 3, maybe based on the price I'm getting it for, maybe I'm getting a 5 or 6% yield on my money. That's how the wealthy invest. That's how people who are careful and deliberate and careful about their choices, that's how they invest. Emulate that approach. Make sure you don't have money in the market that you need for income. Have your money invested so you don't have to have that emotional response. And if you do that, you'll plan stronger.
Retirement planning doesn't have to be hard, complicated, or stressful. It also doesn't have to be done in a hurry or with sales pressure. Since starting Holland Financial in 1997, it has been David Holland's mission to help individuals, couples, and families plan their futures with personalized financial planning. David puts himself in his client's shoes and recommends products and services he would choose for himself or his family. If you'd like to learn more about Holland Financial or to schedule a one-on-one consultation with David, simply call 671-PLAN. That's 671-PLAN. No cost or obligation. Or visit planstronger.com.
Welcome back. You know, I love a good analogy. You know that, right? Okay, well, I have another great one for you. Analogy, metaphor, example. You'll like it. I'm on the way to dinner to meet my family, and it was raining. And if you're in my area, you know what Granada Boulevard is. I'm on Granada Boulevard heading east, and I'm driving along, and all of a sudden, there's somebody in the left lane to go into the trails, and there's a little turn lane there, and they decided to get out of the turn lane. And did I mention it was raining? Okay, that's important for the story. So they get out of the left lane and pull in front of the two cars in front of me. Now, the reason I know all this is I like to look way ahead when I'm driving. I don't drive at the end of the hood. I drive as far down the road as I can because, as I often tell my kids, you can't just look out for your own driving and how you're conducting your vehicle. You've got to look out for other people. So I saw the person pull out, and immediately I noticed they were going very slow. I said, okay, this is not going to good. What ran through my mind is this is not going to be good. So I started putting my brakes on right away. Two cars in front of me slam on their brakes. So first car slams on their brakes. Second car, I'm third. I slam on my brakes. The guy behind me slams on his brakes. The guy behind him did not, or did not quickly enough. So the guy two cars back hits the car behind me. And it was weird because I'm looking in the rearview mirror. You know, all this happens so fast. It feels like it's in slow motion, but it's like seconds, right? So I look back, and the guy behind me is all of a sudden, it looked like he was stopping. He's coming at me again. And that was because the guy behind him hit him and pushed him into me. And it was weird because, like in slow motion, I saw his airbags pop open, like a couple of popcorn kernels, you know, kind of bursting in slow motion. That's really weird. And I'm like, and then I look forward again. And the car in front of me was starting to pull away. I was like, oh my gosh, maybe I've got time here. So I immediately took my foot from the brake to the gas pedal, but there wasn't enough time. I'm thinking, okay, maybe, you know, if I could get my foot over the gas pedal and I can accelerate out of the car's way coming at me. Not fast enough. Next thing I know, this vehicle, it's a small car, but it hit my car, back of my car, the bumper, like a sledgehammer. And I then was launched forward again. Thank God my foot was not on the brake because it pushed me forward. And now, next thing I know, I'm going forward on my original path. So I said, all right, obviously I've got to go see what happened here. I have to report to the scene of the accident. I was tempted, to be honest with you, to go find the person that created this whole problem and ask them to stop politely to go back to the scene of the accident. But I didn't do that. Better judgment got a hold of me very quickly. So I went back to the scene of the accident, pulled in line with everybody else in the proper kind of, we all knew to get in line of where we were and how it worked. So I assessed the damage. Rear end of my car took the brunt of the damage. Nobody was hurt, which is the most important part of this story, but nobody was hurt, but my car took a hit. Now, I tell you all this to tell you that, number one, there's nothing I could have done differently. I've run this through in my mind, as you might imagine, many, many times. In fact, there were a lot of things I did right that kept this from being a lot worse. So, number one, I was paying attention. I wasn't distracted by a cell phone call. I wasn't fiddling with the radio. I had two kids in the back seat. Both of them were being very well behaved. Thank you very much. They were consumed in their iPads and they weren't fighting. I wasn't having to turn around and tell them to be quiet or, you know, distracted by them. I was on the way to dinner and I actually thought about having a glass of wine before going to dinner and then got busy doing something else and didn't. So I had not had a pre-cocktail for dinner. What else? A few other things. But the point is that I was very focused. Oh, and I was driving looking ahead. I was looking forward. Yeah, I knew it was raining. I was being careful. So all those things were important. The other thing is when the accident occurred, I didn't panic. I didn't try to jump into the median or very quickly go into the other lane. So I just navigated. Now, the point of all this story is it's an outstanding analogy. I didn't want this to happen, but it happened, so I get to tell the story and use it as an analogy for how we invest, and how we plan our retirement, how we make good choices, how we navigate the road to retirement. So a couple thoughts. First is that when you are on the road to retirement, you want to make sure that your retirement vehicle is resilient. You know, that bumper, it was very well made. It did what it was supposed to do. It was crumpled all up, but it did what it was supposed to do. You need to make sure your investment, your plan, can see you through on the road. You don't want to, if something happens, all of a sudden you get crushed, okay, like a tin can. You want your retirement vehicle or your overall plan to be well made to absorb a market correction, and it doesn't wreck your whole plan. Seems like a good analogy to me. You also want to monitor your investments just as you would your mirrors. You know, and looking out and paying attention way ahead. You've got to stay focused. You've got to stay tuned into your investments because you can't just ignore them. And the other thing is you need to have checkups on your retirement vehicle. You know, my car was in good shape. My brakes were great. What if my brakes weren't in good shape? What if I hadn't had proper maintenance? You know, what if all the lights were on the dash and there were things that made my ability to navigate that accident situation not as good, not as strong? These are all things that are important to think about. The other is you got to be in the right vehicle based on where you are. You know, the thing you don't want to do is have to speed up. You know, I wasn't running late. I forgot probably one of the most important parts of the story. I wasn't speeding. Not that I ever would, of course, but I wasn't speeding. I think the speed limit's 45. I think I was probably doing 43, 45, right in that range. I wasn't speeding on the road to retirement, right? So the last thing you want to have to do, and I've seen people do this either out of ignorance, I didn't say they're dumb, just they didn't know any better, or on purpose because they're desperate. I've seen people jump into the sports car that's not really appropriate for them. You can see that person has a really hard time getting in and out of the sports car. You're like, yeah, that's not really for you for where you are right now. Or even better, a motorcycle. Okay, so the point is you don't want to have to try to make up for lost time by speeding and being something that is in a too risky of a category for you. Because these things, usually, they don't end well. Yes, you can get quote-unquote lucky. I believe more in chance as opposed to luck. So you could have chance be favorable for you, and you could win the game by being overly risky. And, you know, if things are going really well and you accidentally or on purpose are more aggressive than you should be, well, then, you know, if things go well, then, okay, you got the benefit of that. It happens. But that's not really the place you want to be when you're trying to be smart with your retirement planning. You want to be in a place where you don't have to count on dumb luck or chance or the universe opening up and smiling at you and giving you exactly what you need at the exact right time that is just perfect for what you need. It just doesn't work that way. And if it does, it is just chance. So take more deliberate steps about your retirement and how you invest. Don't look at the herd mentality. Don't get caught up in what everybody else is doing. Do what's best for you. And if you do that, you'll plan stronger.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.